On this episode of the London Lyceum, we talk with, well, the London Lyceum, as we reflect on 5 years of being the London Lyceum, from starting as a podcast in 2019. If you're listening to this the day it releases, it's today, 5 years today, reflecting on that and reflecting on the growth and what we have in store for the future. I think it's a fun episode. It's a group of guys. You're going to get to have a little bit of an inside look on the growth of an institution, the things that were fun, the things that we've made mistakes on, the things that we're excited about in the future. So do listen to the full episode, and do know that on our 5-year anniversary, we do want to encourage you, if you've been helped in any way, encouraged in any way, challenged in any way, to support the mission and the work of the London Lyceum. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, so any amount of donation goes to us as tax deductible, and we would really appreciate your support. We've been completely funded by donors since the very beginning of our existence. We're not being funded at all. But since then, we've been funded by donors like you, listeners like you, who give small amounts, large amounts. It can be just $5. You give up a coffee. It could be $500 that you're committed to the mission. You want to see growth. You want to see more books. You want to see more journals. You want to see more essays, more podcasts. Whatever it is, I encourage you to give to the mission to support us. If you've never given before, now is a great time to do it. There's a link in the show notes that you can go do that, or you can become a consistent small-time donor to the work of the London Lyceum by becoming a member of our exclusive podcast community for just $5 a month. You will be supporting Serious Thinking while also gaining access to additional resources like additional podcasts, and you get our PDF version of our journal, The Hanover Review, for free too. That is a win-win in my book. Now, before I ramble on anymore, here's the episode. Enjoy it. Let us know what you think. Let us know your favorite aspect of the London Lyceum over the last 5 years. We appreciate you. It's been a great journey, and we're excited what the Lord has in store for us. As always, if you have thoughts about the episode or ideas or requests for the show in general, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, or check us out at our website, thelondonlyceum.com. Now, for the only analytic, Baptist, and confessional podcast on the planet, we think this one's going to get you thinking.
Well, welcome to this special edition of the London Lyceum podcast. I am your host today. This is Hunter Heinzman, and I have with us Jordan Stefaniak, our president, Brandon Askew, Morgan Bird, Garrett Walden, and Jake Stone. And we are going to be reflecting on the London Lyceum over the past 5 years and where God has kind of brought this to today, and thinking about where we're at now and how we're going to be going in the future. Many might not be that familiar with our work. Many who are familiar with our work may not be familiar with our story. And so we wanted to take some time just to unpack that. So Brandon, I'm going to kick it off to you, since you're the shadow pope and you're actually the one pulling all the strings. How did you and Jordan meet, and what motivated y'all to start a podcast?
All right. So I'll try to tell this in the short version, I guess. So we met through Twitter, and I guess that would have probably been 2018, maybe. I don't know.
I'm sure we can go back in the DMs or something if you didn't deactivate your account.
Yeah. So we, I tweeted something about covenant theology. I don't remember what it was. Jordan replied and said, he was moving to the area. He'd be interested in chatting about covenant theology. And so that's kind of how it started. And I think when he moved here, I was in Africa. And then right when I got back, we started meeting at Starbucks, every Friday morning, hanging out. We read a couple books together, Craig Carter's Interpreting Scripture book. And I don't remember exactly when the first spark of the idea for the podcast came about. I don't remember if it was him or me. I think it first came up maybe as a joke, it would be neat to do that, but we can't do that kind of thing. And then
there were some of us who definitely thought it was a joke when we heard about it.
Some people probably still think it's a joke, but
some of us who knew you were a little surprised that this was a legitimate venture, but here we are today, 5 years later.
Yeah. So then we talked to, David Hogg, who was, at the time still pastoring in North Carolina and was my professor at Southeastern, just to see what he thought about the idea. We kind of told him by this time we had the outline. We wanted to kind of, our little niche was going to be, Baptist covenant theology. And since, we were both, on some level into philosophy, kind of doing some stuff related to that. And he thought that, you know, it was a great idea and was really supportive. So I guess having somebody we respected tell us it wasn't the dumbest idea they'd ever heard was all we really needed. So then we, what was our first episode on? Like we
did an introduction.
Yeah. Those first episodes were terrible. And when we first started recording, I would go to Jordan's house, and I remember the first time we recorded, I remember the room we were in, cause we recorded in different rooms, but the first time we got like halfway through and, I think I just paused. I was like, this is terrible. Like we need to start over. This is like, I sound stupid. This is clunky. It's 90. So then we started over, then we finished. And then I think we realized he hadn't been recording the whole time. So that one was a waste. So then we, you know, I think Corby Amos was the first person we actually interviewed on the podcast. And he kind of talked to us about his little journey on the doctrine of the Trinity, which was neat. And then, you know, it kind of went on from there and interviewed Jake about maybe the New Hampshire Confession early on, and Morgan on Abraham Booth. And so those were some of the earlier episodes. And then it just kind of took off once Jordan decided it was going to be much more than just a podcast. So that's where he left me in the dust. So,
so Jordan, when you think back on those early years, what stands out to you?
Man, I don't know. I mean, you look back at the original episodes and they're all pretty bad, except for Jake. I mean, Jake's what put us on the map. Jake is still what puts us on the map. He is our resident popular person. And so anytime
we are in deep trouble, if that's the case, we're in trouble.
It is funny, though. If you look back, you know, a lot of the people who are involved with what we're doing now were being interviewed at that point. You know, you've got Chris Wisnicki's in there. JT Turner's helped with us with a bunch of stuff. James Arcati, they're both on our editorial board. Michael Haken has been involved with a lot, including the John Gill Project. So, I mean, it's kind of cool to look back at some of the old ones and see who we were able to talk to and what we were able to learn. We made a lot of mistakes early on. We still make mistakes, but hopefully we make fewer of them. And it's funny, Brandon did deactivate his account, so I can't find when we first met. But I look at his new one. The first direct message I sent was Crawford Gribben's book, talking to him about that. So, you know, his book on survival and resistance in evangelical America. So, I mean, we did every podcast together until Coley was diagnosed with leukemia. And so we did that, like almost all of them were in my house that first 2 years, I feel like. And I remember, I think the first couple of months we did like back to back to back to back up recording sort of thing, where we would go like, okay, 30 minutes. And then legitimately, as soon as that one ended, we'd start the next one with somebody else that we had like organized. I don't know how we did that. That's insane.
Yeah. There were days where we record like 4 or 5 episodes. And I guess the thinking behind that was, you know, now we don't have to do this again for a month. But
yeah,
there was a lot. If you actually wanted to have an intelligent conversation with all 4 or 5 of those people, you know, I mean, yeah, I was exhausted by the end because, you know, you wanted to show up prepared. But not
all the disasters we had with recording and stuff, too. Like, we didn't know what we were using. Like, the amount of times that our computers would crash or the recording software would crash and there would be issues with the recording. Like all the time. And I would spend like hours editing episodes because I didn't know how to do it. And then I have to go like fix stuff because there were mistakes all the time. So thankfully, we're past most of that. I did have a recording issue, what, like 2 weeks ago with Miles Smith, but that was just because my internet sucked, I think. But yeah, I mean, we've learned quite a bit since then.
Yeah. I mean, and Jordan, I know you mentioned Coley. I know that's a big part of our story and just how things shifted. Brandon, would you mind just giving us, our listeners, an update on Coley? And I know many of us have been praying for you and your family, and we just love to hear a little bit about how he's doing.
Yeah. So, first, I mean, you know, right after he was diagnosed, that was July of 2022. So it's been 2 years now. You know, there were a lot of people that listened to the podcast and that were associated that were really kind to our family, in a number of different ways. So we're grateful for that. But as far as Coley's treatment, you know, he's doing really, really well right now. He, he's in remission, and Lord willing, his last treatment will be on October the 21st of this year. So if nothing changes, he will, he'll be done in October, and we can hopefully have all this in the past. But he is, yeah, he's doing great in school. He's been at basketball camp this week. He plays hockey twice a week, so he stays busy. I'm super proud of him, and he's doing really, really well. But thank you for asking.
Yeah, I mean, I've been praying for him, and I remember when it was posted on Twitter. I mean, it was heartbreaking. And so I'm just so excited for him. Another personal question: does your grandmother still listen to the podcast, or has she kind of stopped since you don't host as much?
No, she. So full transparency, she does still listen, but I think she has made it clear to me that she enjoys listening more when I'm on there. And I don't think that has anything to do with anything other than the fact that I'm her grandson and she, you know, wants to hear me. But she's still a faithful listener. I think she even pays the whatever it is, $5 a month to do the premium content or whatever. She probably doesn't even listen to all that, but just so she can be supportive. But yeah, she still listens.
Our number one listener.
Yeah, she was our first listener, I'm pretty sure.
Our only listener for probably like at least a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Morgan, Jake, Garrett, how did y'all get connected?
Yeah, I've known Brandon since we were at Southeastern together, and somewhere in the conversations about this podcast starting, there was maybe some conversation about a church plant, and Jordan's name was on the paper, and Brandon's name was on the paper, and there was some conversation about that. And, you know, that obviously felt like a big joke too. And so I didn't know how to take this thing seriously at first. But at some point, I think this is going to be a recurring theme. The more and more people we talk to around the London Lyceum, that somehow Jake Stone's name is going to come back around, just kind of circle back around with a lot of people. Like many others, I'm sure I received a very personal message from Jake. And it was like he really wanted to get to know me, and he was asking me about some of my favorite theologians, and he was asking me about whether I was on Team Luther or Calvin or some other team, asking me like what I thought about John Gill and that sort of thing. And he was just asking me some great questions. So and then he was smack talking a little bit because he's an Alabama guy and I was a Clemson guy. And back then we were both good. Things have changed. But, you know, and so over the years, man, just
only one of us is still good right now, huh?
Y'all are in the transitions. It's okay. We'll see what happens.
Number one recruiting class for 2025. So,
well, we'll see how many of them stay around for next year. But anyway, and then so over the years, we've just gotten to really, man, watch the thing take off. Like there's only been a couple things in my life that I really doubted that ended up turning around and being like way bigger than I thought. And this was one of them. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was like, I've been so surprised. Both the quality of guests that have said yes, that's honestly part of what I don't understand. Like, especially those early years, I'm like, why are people saying yes to you guys? Like when you're reaching out and just like, hey, you got an hour to talk to me, and people said yes over and over and over, which is really cool. And then, yeah, just seeing like the reach and obviously the publications and things like that. It just feels, if you had told me 5 years ago that this is where London Lyceum would have been, I would have lost my marbles. I mean, that would have just seemed outrageous. So, yeah, that's kind of a little bit of how I got connected.
I had no idea you were that pessimistic about it. I mean, I knew you had doubts, but
I felt like at the time it felt realistic. At the time, it just felt like what's going to happen, really, you know? But then I don't know, man. You guys, this is cool. So y'all built something.
Yeah, I think Jake was one of my connecting points. Jake and Garrett, somehow between those two, me and Jake hit at the right time because I was in a Baptist history seminar and he was real excited. We were talking Baptist history, and then he realized I was a patristics guy. And we don't text as much about Baptist anymore as we did that semester. But we still hang out a good bit.
Yeah, so I connected with Brandon through Twitter. And that would have been in 2018. And then he and I got to hang out at the G3 conference in January of 2019. It was a whole long time ago, different world. They had Mark Dever speak back then.
And Piper.
So, yeah, and Piper. And so we hung out there for a good bit. And then later that year, I took a trip from Mississippi to the Banner of Truth conference and drove the whole way and stayed with Brandon and them part of my trip up and really got to have a good time. That was supposed to have been when I would meet Jordan for the first time. We were supposed to all three have dinner that night, but you know, Jordan can't handle being around a real Baptist too long. And so he wasn't able to be with us that night. I'm thinking about this church plan. It must've been going to be like a Bunyanite Presbyterian church. I'm glad
Jake, you read the bylaws and you liked them.
Well, that's a lot's happened since then. I don't remember. but no, you know, and I remember, you know, Brandon is the one who really told me about the London Lyceum, the idea, you know, about Jordan and the, you know, not then and still today, I don't really know what analytic theology philosophy is. It's still kind of a little bit of a blur to me, but I do know what Baptist and confessional means. And I'm very honored. I tell people, you know, especially since after moving up to Southern and all, people kind of tag me as the London Lyceum guy on campus. And so that's been nice. And I like to tell people that I was one of the first guests on the London Lyceum because people like me were the only ones they could get on at the beginning. And so we just kind of help, you know, fill the airwaves for those early days before the real heavy hitters could come on. I look back and think, you know, it's really interesting to me to see in 5 years how much the group, the podcast, everything's grown, the different things that have been added to, you know, the mission and so forth, but then also how consistent it stayed as well, that we really, you know, a lot of the core today is what it was then. And then I think that's what's been a blessing to just to see it grow. And I think in an era when most people think you can only make an impact by following the clickbait, the hot takes, all that kind of stuff, that we've done a pretty good job of avoiding going down those trails and really trying to have substance and add real substance to the conversation.
We were talking about theonomy before it was cool. Like, there's been a lot of ways where we've beaten
the whole series of articles and stuff. Yeah,
including the man himself.
He had he had an article on natural law. Stephen Wolf did.
Yeah, I mean, it was a well-written essay.
It was my favorite essay in that series, but he's gone beyond that.
Well, I want to make clear we didn't do everything perfectly.
So. That's when he was at Princeton.
Yeah, Garrett, how'd you get connected?
I'm terrible at remembering these kinds of things. This is what my wife is good at. I'm pretty sure.
Garrett is a prototypical historian. He knows everything that John Ryland Sr. ate for breakfast for a decade, but he doesn't remember these details from his own life. See?
That is sadly true.
Fits the caricature right there.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm pretty sure I reached out to Jordan at one point, and I was getting into some Baptist history research, and I think I probably said something like, could I send you, like, an essay or something from time to time for the website. Would y'all be open to a contribution like that? And Jordan was like, yeah, why don't you just become a fellow? And I was like, cool. It sounded official. And so I think that was my initial connection. And then, yeah, stuck around. And I've been really grateful. I mean, this has become a pretty significant part of my life and feeling like I'm contributing something to the world of Baptist study and thinking. So really grateful to have been a part of it.
Garrett has devoted his life to defending every bad guy from Baptist history and telling you that he's in fact actually a good guy.
Every bad guy except for John Bunyan. The ultimate villain.
He said Baptist, Jordan.
The best-selling Baptist Baptist book of all time.
But he'll defend John Collett Ryland's open communion.
What scares me is I think that Gary one day going to begin to, his 40s will be devoted to him defending Thomas Collier, the ultimate Baptist bad guy.
Let's hope not.
Don't think so.
Well, speaking of bad guys, what podcast episode is y'all think back? Which one was the most shocking to you? Like, you're getting into this episode and you're thinking, like, what in the world are we in right now? Which one is the most shocking for you, Jordan and Brandon both?
We all have the same answer for this, but I'll let Brandon explain it.
Yeah, so we did a series on different denominations, and this wasn't the first one that we did, and we, you know, basically had like the same list of questions that we asked, you know, every representative from the different traditions, and they were going great. Like, some of my favorite episodes that we've done were out of that series, the Lutheranism episode, the Methodism episode. Like, I mean, those were really good. Then we did one on Pentecostalism, and I think the first person that we had asked to do that episode had been unable to or whatever, and had directed us to this person. And I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting. I guess I was thinking about the Pentecostals that, like, I know from my town and, like, you know, kind of what they're about. And it just, it turned into something totally different. Like, by the time we got to the end, I was just like asking the guy, did he even believe in, like, you know, propositional truths when it comes to the faith? You know, was, did he affirm, you know, the ancient creeds? It was basically a progressive politic advertisement for about half an hour. But yeah, so that was definitely the most shocking for me. I was had my jaw on the floor for most of it. I didn't even really know what to even ask him. I mean, he was very nice guy. I mean, super nice to us. I mean, he was not mean. He wasn't abrasive or anything like that. It was just not at all what we were expecting. So that would definitely be my answer. But the follow-up that we did to that, we had Paul Sanchez come on to sort of give the history of Pentecostalism. And he, I mean, that was a great episode, I thought, not only because I felt like we needed a follow-up to that episode on Pentecostalism, but just even on its own. I mean, that was really, really good. But
yeah, I had emailed Amos Young about doing it, and he recommended J. Aaron Simmons, who came on and was the one who did that. And it was just so, like, off the wall. He's talking about, like, COVID vaccines, talking about spaghetti, and he's talking about his lifted truck. It was just, I have no idea what he's talking about, like, basically getting discipline from his church. It was, like, awkward at points. Like, he couldn't find a church because they kept getting kicked out. And I'm like, I don't think you want to say that in a podcast. It was unique. I got so many text messages after that being like, hey, you should get somebody else to talk about Pentecostalism.
Jordan, podcasts that you have, like, after recording, have just said, we can't post that. And just scrap everything.
We've had one where the guest asked us not to post it, and it's not worth saying who that was. It doesn't matter.
It was a fine episode. I think we just caught him off guard with a couple questions that he wasn't prepared for, and I think he felt like he didn't give the greatest answer to him.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Pentecostal guy beat out Thomas Ord, if that's how you say his name, is crazy in and of itself.
Thomas Ord was what I expected. I wasn't, like, shocked by anything he said. Like, that was just totally vanilla Thomas. So it was like, it is what it is.
Yeah. That's a good point. Well, so that's most shocking. Which episode or roundtable has kind of stood out to you as your favorite? Like, y'all have favorite podcasts? Y'all think of it in those ways? I know, as a listener, Andrew Davison's was impactful to me. I mean, very formative. It came at just the right time. And some of my theological, journey or learning, and it was formative in a major way. So it stands out to me as one of my favorites. His own participation in God. Do y'all have that? Or Morgan, Jake, Garrett, do y'all have favorite podcasts that you're not the one that's being interviewed?
So yeah, there are a couple of podcasts and podcast types that have really been helpful to me. I have really surprisingly liked many of the podcasts that I have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. Like, when we had Linda Zagzebski on to talk about omnisubjectivity, I had never heard that term before, and I still don't know what it is, but I feel like I learned a lot. I couldn't tell you what I learned right now, but I feel better for having heard it. And I'm like, this is the kind of thing, like, I would never come across this anywhere else. And the London Lyceum is really the only place I would ever hear this. And I think there's probably something of value here. So, it's one of those things, I don't think I can really express a specific thing, a way that's benefited me, but I feel like that's something that's really helped me to be aware of how much I don't know. And so that's been humbling and good. But then my favorite thing, that my favorite kind of podcast that we do, is when we are like really into Baptist history. So some of those early podcasts, when like Morgan was on talking about Booth, and Jake was talking about the confession and talking about Fuller, and we've had Haken on, and Nettles, and Timothy George. We've had lots of just really great Baptist history people talking about great Baptist history things. Those are the things that I like, but that's more just my own personal interest. But those are some of my favorites.
I mean, I think for me, I enjoyed the Carl Truman episode. I'm just trying to scroll back through here.
Which Carl Truman one?
The one on his book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think it was his one on Karl Marx that really,
we did that one
gave
first.
Us some publicity as people started listening to us.
I think we've interviewed Alex DePrima two or three times. I've enjoyed all of his. He's just, he knows his stuff. So, Baptist Covenant Theology with Sam Renahan was one of my favorites. I thought it was neat that we've done, I think, two episodes on impassibility, and they've been, I don't know if competing accounts would be the right way to put it, but, certainly not the same way of understanding impassibility. So it was, one was kind of early on with Sam, and then the other one was more recent. I'm not even going to attempt to say that fellow's last name.
Paul Gavril Yuck.
That sounds good. But that one was really good. I wasn't on that episode, but I loved listening to that one. I enjoyed the roundtables, specifically the Covenant Theology one. I mean, there's been so many. Timothy George. I mean, interviewing Timothy George was awesome. And I've already mentioned the Methodist episode and the Lutheran episode out of the denomination series. Both of those guests, Dr. Collins and Dr. Kolb, were great. So,
yeah, I would add the ones with Alex on Spurgeon, and also the one that he did talking about the issues of, race and those things during a very, heated conversations were going on, that I thought brought a really good historical and practical and pastoral viewpoints on that, that were very helpful. Dr. Haken, when he came on discussing on his book on the Lord's Supper and Baptist and how we've understood the means of grace with the supper, was one of my favorites. I agree, has already been said about the roundtable on covenant theology. In fact, I think probably, and just, anecdotally, my time up here at Southern, when I've had people talk to me or ask about the London Lyceum, that's probably the one episode that I've heard the most people talk about has been the most helpful to them, was the episode that we did on Baptist covenant theology and getting the different perspectives and hearing kind of fleshed out some of the nuanced similarities and differences. I agree on Timothy George. Now, more recently, I really enjoyed the episode on John Owen in the book of Hebrews. I thought that was very interesting, and, that's not a path that I want to go down as far as, scholarship myself, but it made me realize there's a lot to be done still on Owen, and I think that was very good. Plus, Dr. Tweedale is a William Carey fellow graduate like me, so that's why I liked him too.
Jordan, can you tell us, what is our most listened to podcast?
Okay, so I can
cut this. I think it's the dispensationalism episode, isn't it?
So we switched podcast hosts a little over a year ago. So the stats on this one don't carry over. So I'd have to go look exactly. But since we switched over, I'm going to guess it's one of the roundtables or something like that. Since we switched over, it is it's actually, since we switched, it's Reformed Two Kingdom Theology with Jonathan Beakey. And then Theological Interpretation of Scripture Roundtable and the Ordinary Means of Grace with Neil Stewart, and then the Sabbath in the Dutch Reformed Tradition with Kyle Dieleman. So if I mix those stats together with our old podcast platform, it might be different.
A couple more that just came to mind for me. Let's see. We interviewed Todd Billings on his book on death. I don't know, that book just did something to me like that. I don't read books, and I feel like it impacts me in a way that book did. So talking to him about it, and obviously just, you know, his story behind the reason why he's written a couple of his books, that was great. I loved that. And I have now forgotten what the other one was I was going to bring up, but oh well, maybe it'll come to me.
I mean, there was some cool stuff. Like, I mean, talking to Michael Allen, I thought was a really good episode. And I don't know if he's gotten the amount of listens that he should have on his episode, but there's been a lot of them that have, I mean, Jake, you mentioned John Tweedale. There's people like that, him and Robert Kolb. They just like exude this like joy and happiness and kindness. And that has always been really cool experience of the podcast, is meeting people like that who just are really just genuine, kind people. And it's awesome. So that's been probably the coolest thing about recording a podcast, is meeting people like that and talking to them, where you can really feel just the happiness in their lives and in what they're studying and why they're studying it. But even, I mean,
the Davenant episode, hypothetical universalism with Michael Lynch.
And, that was great. We had Tim Cooper on to talk about Richard Baxter. That was a good one. He's one of those people that just was such a joyful, pleasant person. It was really great to hear from him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tom Ward on SCOTUS reflected that. I mean, that guy that did, he talked about analogical language. I understood the first half of that one, but I don't remember. I did not understand the second half of it. It got away from me.
Joshua Lee Harris.
Yeah, Joshua Harris. What's astounding to me is just the amount of expertise that is communicated and scholarship that's, you know, just really helpful scholarship, and just not just for the, you know, not just for academia, but also for the church, that y'all been able to connect with and get, you know, to people who can listen and learn from that and spark research interest, you know, perhaps even thesis topics or dissertation topics. And it's really astounding. Another great episode would be the Hanover House on communion, open and closed communion. Garrett said next time we're talking, we're gonna have to podcast.
If you're talking about asking me about shocking episodes, you know, we're supposed to have this kind of layout how this is going to go, and we get on there, and Jordan's got this 30-minute PowerPoint presentation, and had the audacity to accuse William Carey of promoting open communion, which was not true. All right. And we had to correct that record immediately. And so, I mean, I already kind of had a semblance of where I was going to go. And then Jordan just throws out this PowerPoint presentation. And I'm like, I got to start taking notes like I'm in class, because we've got so many errors here to have to correct. So, yeah. So if we're talking about shocking episodes, that was one that shocked me. Well, there was another one, but we won't go down that one right now.
I think the episodes I hear the most people ask about, it's that shovel story, the digging up. I mean, that I get people asking about that often. I mean, it's classic. What? Oh man. Well, the last couple of years have been a big couple of years. I mean, Jordan, when did you start the website? Like, when did the website come into all of this?
Yeah, the website actually started like almost exactly a year after we started the podcast. And I had originally just done that as a way to drive more traffic to the podcast.
Yeah.
But then it sort of morphed into, this is an opportunity to actually have an impact by running essays, because we got more people than I expected that were writing for us. And it just kind of like kept growing. And so now, you know, that's been a real launching pad for a lot of the other stuff that we've been able to do since then. So I think it started in August of 2019, or 2020, whenever the following year after we started the podcast, it started. Oh, I launched it.
Yeah. I mean, and we've launched, I mean, just the past couple of years, we've launched generally particular with Jake and Jesse. I mean, the Hanover Review has really taken off, especially with this recent issue, Engaging Barrett's book. I mean, just like I said, a group of top-notch scholars from around the world to engage what's an important topic to all of us. I mean, we're all interested in some sense of form or fashion, retrieval for the sake of renewal. And we think that there's more continuity with the church that comes before 1517 than has sometimes been suggested. So it's something that's near to our heart, and we want to make sure that project is carried out with excellence and scholar and just a scholarly precision. We've launched the Hanover Press. We've got some cool books coming down the pipeline. I don't know what I can say or not say with that, so I'll let Jordan say that. But I guess some questions I just have for Jordan, Brandon as well. You know, what, like, how has the Lord been teaching y'all amid these changes? Like, what's been going through y'all's minds? Why move forward with the press at this time? Tell us a little bit about some of your motivations and just kind of what's going on the inside.
Yeah. So I will give, for me, I think the piece that comes into my mind the most is stewardship, is stewarding the resources that we have and have been given. And then, building friendships and relationships with other people and sort of laboring together and cooperating together to build something special that can resource ultimately the church at large. And so I just want to, there's a lot of guys who have a lot of talent, a lot of giftings, and they're at a place in their life where they're not able to really actually find an outlet for that. And so we want to be like a hub that can, like, we can all join together and have an opportunity to produce that, the content and material that these people have giftings to do. And so trying to find opportunities for people like that to do that is something that I've just been passionate about from the beginning, I think, especially once we created the website. So I pulled up the timeline. So we launched the podcast. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, it was 5 years ago today, August 14th, 2019. And I look back at the stats and we had 3,000 total listens by the end of the year that year. So not very many. In August 18th, 2020 is when we started the website. And then we did the John Gill Project, launched in 2022. The Hanover Review launched in 2022, and it was first published issue in April of 2023. And then we had a new website redesigned in 2023. And then we started Hanover Press in the fall of 2023, which is even less than a year ago. And we've already, I mean, we're, there's so much stuff that we're working on right now and doing, and I'm really excited about it.
Would this be the proper setting for me to air my grievances about the John Gill Project and
air all my
work?
This is an going appropriate down the time. Drain,
my sleepless nights and all for nothing.
You're teasing the listeners.
I was going to say,
what are the grievances?
I did all that work for nothing.
Same here.
What do you mean? That is the grievance.
So the Gill Project, I'll just get
hours.
Like
hours.
Yeah, hours. Sorry. That was so horrible. Hours given away. So what happened? We start before the Gill Project really formed, you know, we just had this idea of like, hey, we should have a reading group for a year on Gill stuff because like he's a classical Baptist theologian. That's great. We want to hoist up some sort of a model in these ways. The most recent publication of his stuff is like old and really small typesetting. So I reached out to a publisher and was like, what would it take to get a volume, to get Gill's volume back in print in a readable typesetting that's accessible and affordable? And that morphed into Michael Haken getting pulled in, and he was like, we need to do an abridged version and it needs to be like this and this and this. And so we just kind of like, okay, well, we don't know what we're doing, but we'll work on it together. So we picked the sections. Maybe like six different guys working on this, Jake, Brandon, others, where I don't know where it got lost in translation. None of us knew what we were doing at the time, really. But it was kind of like, I think Michael Haken was like, we need to do a modernization of some degree. And no one had the sense to be like, what do we mean by modernization? And so I think everybody was kind of like taking different approaches, adjusting things, editing things for this abridgment. And then it gets all turned in because we really pushed the timeline. Like, we need to get this done by the end of April or whatever it was. And because we proposed the idea back in January. and Michael Haken gets it, and Jonathan Swan gets it, and they're like, can't do this. this is not Gil. This is bad. And so the whole thing gets scrapped. So all of Brandon's work, all of my work too, and Garrett's work and Jake's work, all of it was gone, committed to the Flames.
So I think we would want to say it's not that any one particular person's work was bad. So it's not a personal slight to you, Brandon. It was inconsistency.
The most frustrating part about the inconsistency thing is I literally said, these are not all going to read the same when we have five or six different people doing it. And no one listened. Then we all did the work for nothing. But we can move on.
We learned. That was
what you going to talk about
foundation.
After the Gil project? Just
you
let's move on.
John Gil very closely for quite a while, and that is a blessing in itself, is it not, Brandon?
That was part of the foundation of Hanover Press, because we realized lots of mistakes that we made, and we realized lots of gaps in publishing and lots of things that you need. So, like, that was instrumental in actually creating Hanover Press ultimately. So it wasn't wasted work.
All I know is that it turned Garrett into a hyper-Calvinist who doesn't like Andrew Fuller now and thinks that John Gill is right behind Moses and Elijah in the rankings.
Those are some lies. But all that to say, Brandon, I do agree with your grievance. That was a really unfortunate stretch.
One of the many mistakes we've made.
Yeah, so I'm sorry that happened.
I will say Garrett did talk to some of our interns at our church recently on Andrew Fuller, and it actually sounded like he loved the gospel. And so I was very pleased by what he was saying.
I know how to turn it on when I have to, Hunter.
He even said, I agree. He said, I agree.
He's a chameleon in that. See? George Ella today, Michael Haken tomorrow. See, you just don't know. Yeah.
You never know. You never
Auburn
know.
Auburn people.
As fickle as their head coach.
Yeah.
It is funny to look back and see how that hiccup led to the Hanover Press.
There's a lot of things that led to it, but that was definitely part of it.
But what are some of the books that you have that we have coming down the pipe that you're willing to talk about, and just, I guess, give your elevator pitch of the mission of Hanover Press and why you think it's important now?
So I'll give the pitch. And then anybody else who wants to jump in. So I think Hanover Press is important for a couple of reasons. One of those is that we need more Christian theology that's written at an academic level, but also that's written by academics for lay people. Maybe we'll target some lay people with some of our stuff, but primarily we're targeting academic monographs and then the tier below it to like your educated pastor or your educated layman sort of thing. We have a lot of publishers who they may try to get there, but there's not the appropriate sort of peer review and oversight on projects to make sure that the quality is there and mistakes aren't made. And so we think that it's important for that reason. We need that, but it's also important because there's not a large scale publisher that's doing the work that we think is necessary to restore and retrieve Baptist theology and history. And there's not an evangelical publisher who's explicitly trying to do philosophical theology or analytic theology or anything like that. You can't find it. You get boxed in because the places that will publish it, like Oxford or Cambridge or others, don't typically appreciate more conservative theology. So you're going to have to like tinker with it and make it weird oftentimes to get published there. Sometimes, not always the case. So we want to be a space that is an opportunity to promote these sorts of material, but also producing it at a price point that's you don't have to sell your left leg to buy it. You can go publish with Oxford for $150. This wonderful series, Oxford Studies in Historical Theology, which is no longer in existence, and we're going to try to take that space to like continue the mantle because there are tremendous monographs in that series, but they're all priced at prohibitive prices, and people would buy them. So Hanover Press is, we want to solve that mission. So we want to create this original Protestant academic theology and philosophy that can resource and serve the church ultimately. But we also want to retrieve classical Baptist theology appropriately. And so I think it's super important and very valuable now. So we have an editorial board of over 45 senior scholars and pastors that oversee all of the published work to make sure it gets approved and or rejected. I mean, I've been abundantly pleased with the efforts of that editorial board. They've just done a tremendous job already of vetting the proposals that we're getting, thinking about the health of the press and the ultimately the shape of books. Like, it's just, they're doing an awesome job to make sure that we only publish the highest quality stuff and that we make sure that we give authors the greatest possible experience and give them the greatest possible amount of feedback on their manuscripts to enhance them to a significant degree. So what's coming down? Well, the next volume is Advice to Christian Philosophers, which has 24 essays, I think, of the nation's top Christian philosophers giving just advice, reflecting back on 40 years since Alvin Plantinga published a seminal essay, Advice to Christian Philosophers. It's people all across the spectrum, very excited about that. That should be a really interesting and valuable volume. The show, I mean, we've got Peter VandenWagen, Linda Zagzebski, who Garrett mentioned. We've got everybody in this volume. So it's very, very exciting to be able to publish that as one our first original contribution. So I'm really excited about all the work we're doing, the books that are moving through the pipeline right now, the interest that we have. We have a lot of interested proposals that are being worked out. So I'm very excited to see what happens in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, because we're not looking at this as a 1 or 2 year project. This is like 5, 10, 15 decades long project that will hopefully long last, go on past our lives, continue to resource the church, both sort of academic theology, but also just Baptist theology. We need someone committed to that. Like, no offense to B&H, but they're not committed to Baptist theology. That is like one small segment of what they do. That's fine. But they're interested in doing other stuff. We want to be actually very interested in producing Baptist theology and history. That someone needs to care for that and to encourage that and cultivate that and say, that's what we want to do. I don't care if it sells 10 copies. Somebody needs to preserve that and continue to move that on. Okay. I'm going to stop with my pitch there and let anybody else jump in.
Jordan's starting to sound like Jake.
Well, one of the things that I've liked about how Hanover Press has taken off is, I think we've got a really particular focus in terms of like the quality.
Generally
particular. But I do think we have a little bit of diversity in our like kinds of things that are coming out. So having some reprints of old literature that has been out of print or hard to find, I think that's really, really valuable. That's really where my heartbeat is seeing old Baptist literature brought out of the archives and onto your shelf and into your hands.
And Garrett, tell me about retrieving this old Baptist literature. It's not just like taking a photocopy of a PDF and giving it new typesetting. What else goes in to making it usable for the next generation?
Yeah, yeah. So you can go on Google Books right now and you can find a bunch of stuff that, you know, you wouldn't be able to pick up at a store or order off Amazon. So you could find, you know, Robert Hall Sr., his book, Help Designs Travelers. I don't think it's in print anymore in any kind of really accessible way, but you could find the PDF of, you know, when he produced it in the 18th century. So what we're trying to do is bring things like that into the 21st century with helpful footnotes. If you were to go and look at the footnotes of some of these 18th century documents, they're almost completely unhelpful. I'm working through some stuff right now with Gil, and some of his footnotes are the most obscure things that you're going to have to go track down if you care to follow up on some things. And then there's also a lot of expressions and references that they'll use in the text that you just need a trained eye to help you understand what's being said. Otherwise, some of that stuff is just going to, you can read it, but it's just not going to be helpful to you. So you when you're doing a like a reprint, you really need to preserve the author's voice and preserve their words, but you need to supply some introductory material and some footnoting in order to give the reader real understanding. At the end of the day, we don't just want people to say, "My eyes have seen all the words in this book." We want them to say, "I have read and understand a significant amount of this book." And I think editorial guidance is just going to be necessary because of the passing of time.
And I mean, the cool thing about Hanover Press is that more often than not, our editorial board is saying no, which tells me the process is working because they take it seriously. And they say, we want to actually produce the best resources for people. to resource them appropriately. We don't want to just publish anything. We don't want to just publish stuff to make money. We're trying to publish the right resources.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, one of the things, Jordan, you highlighted is this isn't just a, you know, bunch of guys, you know, running something out of their garage. We're hoping to build something that spans generations. And so if the Lord is gracious enough to allow us to continue and develop as we hope, not just for the next 5 years, but to be an institution that really does have a generational impact, maybe something like Bristol, even thinking back to the 1700s, Baptist roots. One of the things Jake kind of mentioned this earlier about just how the importance of our mission has just been driven home in recent years. How do you think that has, like, how has the importance of our mission been driven home and reinforced in just recent years? And what temptations do organizations like ours face in these times? And why is it important that we stay kind of in our lane doing what we're called to do? Brandon, Jordan, anyone hop in on that?
I mean, if you let the cultural winds or whatever drive you, you're going to end up tossed up against the rocks eventually. You may get, you know, clicks and views, but your soul is going to be corrupted in the process. And so, and you're also not going to really produce lasting material over time. If you want to have a real true impact, you've got to be laser focused on what the Lord has called you to do, what he's gifted you to do. And a lot of the guys involved with us have been gifted with various theological, philosophical, and historical acumen, and we need to keep them focused on that. That doesn't mean we don't talk to the issues of the day and have important interactions in those formats, but I think we have to be constantly focused on still producing quality Baptist content, still producing quality historical content, talking about the confessional stuff, talking about analytic theology sort of stuff. Like, that has to be part of what we continue to do as an organization, or ultimately you'll lose your North Compass. You'll go blow off into the winds, and all you'll do is talk about whatever's cool at the time. Like, what's cool now to talk about is Christian nationalism, et cetera. When we started, I feel like it was critical race theory and everything. And if you majored in that stuff, you're irrelevant. So, like, if you want to have continued, sustainable, faithful relevance, you got to stay focused on what you're gifted and called to do. And none of us are critical race theory scholars or Christian nationalist scholars. People have opinions, but, like, unless you are really an expert in it, we just don't plan to talk about it.
I want to talk about Harris versus Trump and who I think she'll pick for the VP. But I pulled over here. Do what, Garrett?
You think she might pick you?
No. I have down here in Mississippi my hardback copy of the John Gill commentaries, and I was looking through this when they reprinted these in 1989, the Baptist Standard Bearer out of Arkansas, and there's a list of the subscribers' names. So these were all the people who signed up and gave money for this to be launched, to publish. And I had to look, and sure enough, here in the ends is Dr. Tom Nettles. And this was when he was at Mid-America, so it's Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. Nettles was basically fired from Mid-America for preaching on the doctrines of grace on a Reformation Day chapel at Mid-America, which is, he'll tell that story. Like, he said one time to somebody, somebody said, you know, you could lose your job. And he said, well, I've been fired before, so that doesn't scare me. And it was because of, yeah, that caused a lot of controversy among donors. But I thought that was interesting. So, but you can see I left Gill here in Mississippi. I just go with the digital form.
Makes me a little bit sad, Jake.
A little bit sad. Well, we're going to get a new Gill volume soon. So it don't.
That's
it
right.
Don't matter. We're going to leave that one in Mississippi. Well, Brandon.
I think Jordan, go ahead.
Go ahead, Morgan.
I was going to say, I think one of the temptations would be to move away from our openness to, like, listen to different people and just kind of click up. And I think it's easy either, like, on the one hand, you're, like, afraid of maybe being thought of a certain, or false assumptions that people might make. if you interview the wrong guest or have a conversation or you're too nice to somebody. Or on the other hand, you know, just kind of getting sucked into, cornering off and, not keeping that charity and open-mindedness. I think because we're confessional, we have our guardrails, we have our boundaries, you know, we have a real strong sense of, what we believe. But there is a real, I think that's been one of the values over the last 5 years is just the willingness of Jordan and Brandon and others to engage with people who do think very, very differently and to do it in ways, that hopefully are, kind of a little bit countercultural right now to take this position of, I think different than you, I'm on the other side. And so therefore I am going to hate you, or I'm not going to talk to you, or I'm going to act like you don't exist. But instead to enter in and say, hey, let's have some dialogue. We're firm on our positions, but we'd still love to be charitable and hear from you. So I think that's something that's going to be important to maintain as we grow, is just that sense of openness and charitableness while we hold very tightly to our confessional heritage as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's key. I mean, just the ability to be able to engage others, to listen, to be curious, not in the vicious way, but to in the desiring of truth, and do so with confidence of what we believe, knowing that we're not going to be swayed to and fro by the winds, the doctrines of the day, but be able to get to hear what other people are thinking, that we may learn and be better as pursuers of Christ, readers of the scriptures, and not just to, own the next person or but actually seeking to learn from others, I think is one of the things that has really drawn me to the London Lyceum. One of the things that sticks out to me, I know we kind of moved on from podcasts, but Andrew Hollingsworth and I, we jokingly, talk about how much we disagree in theology and different things. But his podcast episode on the eternal relations of origin was probably one of the most helpful, just the way he engaged it. And even though we differ on that, him talking through that has helped me to be better at my be a better holder of my position, even though it's different than his. And that's one of the beautiful things about what Brandon, you and Jordan have been able to do through the London Lyceum. So we're nearing an hour. So I want to just kind of bring this to a close just by asking, what are y'all most excited about moving forward? We look back, we're talking a little bit about where we want to go, but what most excites you about the next 5-10 years of the London Lyceum's ministry as we look ahead?
I'll go real quick, hopefully. So we've got some secret projects we're working on that hopefully in 5-10 years will be out there and we'll be excited about. So I'll just talk about the one that's publicly available. I think the work of Hanover Press is very, very exciting and foundational. Right now, I mean, everybody with the London Lyceum, everybody with Hanover Press is 100% volunteer. So no one gets paid anything, which I think is an incredible thing in itself. I talk to people regularly that they're shocked that we do this with no financial assistance. People just labor and give of their time and effort and resources to make this happen. And they're doing that for Hanover Press as well. So if you're listening, I strongly encourage you to give to support the work there so that we continue to produce high quality resources. Because even though everybody's volunteering, making a book is still not free. So if you've been blessed or encouraged or challenged or frustrated by any of our resources, you should give up a coffee this week and go ahead and donate it to our website. I'll put the link in the show notes here so that you can make sure to do that. But I really am excited about Hanover Press. I think we're going to make a real impact in our community and in those outside of it, evangelicals, Baptists, everywhere. I think it's going to be a tremendous resource for the church and for the Academy as well. So I'm super excited about that.
Well, I mean, just on a personal note, I'm just looking forward to kind of getting back more involved with things. I felt like I was super involved the first, 3 years, 3.5 years. And then obviously when everything happened with Coley, I took a step back. But and I don't know that I'll ever get back to, being on the majority of the podcast episodes or anything like that. And I don't know what my role looks like, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, whatever, but I'm just looking forward to, being more involved in the future. And I mean, it's been, I admire Jordan's,
initiative. You know, he just, you know, this started with literally, as we discussed earlier, you know, he and I just recording terrible podcast episodes in his guest bedroom to, you know, now there's a press, there's a journal, there's, you know, a website with, you know, good articles, and the, you know, we get to interview world-class, you know, theologians and historians and philosophers. I mean, that's amazing to me. So I, you know, and that's just been in 5 years. So I'm just, you know, big picture wise, just, optimistic about what things could look like 5 to 10 years from now. So, I'm very excited.
Hey, Brandon, you think now would be a good time to tell everybody about the plans you have for the, London Lyceum Alaska cruise that you're planning, for next year?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I do,
are we going to have the Gaither singing for us?
Oh man, that'd be great. But I, you know, I do have a dream of a Ligonier like Baptist brick and mortar, you know, place where people go and can learn Baptist history. And I don't know what that would look like, but I just think that would be cool, to be able to do something like that. You know, people would come on like little, you know, little weekend retreats or whatever, and have somebody there teaching on Andrew Fuller or whatever. I have no idea, but you know, that would be neat, but that also costs a lot of money. So I don't know, but it's a dream.
Yeah, that's great. Let me just make a plug for the London Lyceum Society, which is our Slack channel. and so maybe if you're listening and you're not super familiar with what we do, and, but you're interested, maybe you don't have like a ton of stuff to contribute. You're not like writing articles or books or whatever, but you want to keep learning. You should jump into the Slack group, and there's some serious and edifying conversations that happen. And there are some completely silly conversations that happen. And so, but it's a good group of people who are, I think, driven by some similar values and have a heart for the mission and vision of the London Lyceum. And
we've even allowed a few Presbyterians in, right?
Yeah, we have a couple of Presbyterians, some Arminians, some neoclassical theists, one person, I don't know what in the world he is, but we've got some people that are straight down the middle, and some people that are watching butterflies in left field. And so you should join the Slack group. It's a good time.
Oh man, I echo that sentiment. The Slack is actually one of the ways I got really plugged in and connected to the London Lyceum. Jake and Garrett, that's kind of where I first started, and I was scared because I wasn't 1689 at the time, and I thought all 1689 people were jerks, and then found out that's not actually the case, and really have moved. That's like my confessional home now, but yeah, I echo Garrett's plug to join the London Lyceum Society, or the Slack, as I affectionately call it. Well, thank you for listening to this special edition of the London Lyceum podcast. I'll be grateful to hand the torch back to Jordan and Brandon and Jake and other people who host these podcasts more regularly. Real excited about what God is doing in and through the London Lyceum. We really do believe that this is going to be an institution that's a great service to the church and to the academy as we seek to retrieve classical Baptist theology and make that accessible to both pastors, students, theologians, historians alike. Thank you.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry! Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.